Good. Okay, it is 4:10. Oh, Lisa, you got to mute. I think, or maybe not muted. Okay, I think we're good. Okay, welcome to the March 27th, 2025 Emergency Preparedness Committee meeting. It is 4:11 now. I call this meeting to order. We're going to do attendance. I don't know, my brain's fried right now. Roll call, thank you. Let's see. Douglas Bebington.
Here.
Lisa Corona.
Here.
Don Dahmer.
Don.
You're here. Katie Gluck. Adrian Johnson, not here. Peter Liddell, not here. Annette McCoubrey,
Here.
welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Paul Moss.
Here.
And David Spath.
Here.
And then Roddy,
I'm
Paul,
here.
and myself,
What,
Danielle
like?
Victor. Woo! We made it. All right. First thing is public comment. Under public comment, any public may address the committee on any subject not listed on the agenda. Please address your comments to the committee and not to staff or the audience. Each speaker may address the committee under the public comment for a limit of 3 minutes. All righty. Any public comments in the room? Yes. Okay. Since I got your email, you sent an email, then I'm not gonna, you're gonna read it, right?
Well, if you're here, you're supposed to not read it.
Oh yeah,
I
perfect.
read
Okay.
it just for my notes.
Yeah, that's great. Perfect. Yep,
I'm
it's all
Alex
you.
Siegel, the head of the Wildfire Community. So I wanted to talk about a little bit about the impact of the hazardous grant, the hazardous foliage grant, which was a great thing for the community. But what I found is that even though it's $2,000, which seems hard to resist, it took between five and seven contacts to convince people who did use it to take the grant. So it kind of shows, I'm a psychologist, the denial that people are in. So considering our vulnerability to fire, we need a grassroots strategy to address the denial in terms of the home hardening challenges that we have. The LA fires raised awareness and increased home hardening for some residents, but it takes so much encouragement to get people to turn the corner on it. So, because we don't have significant resources in Kensington for home inspection and the fire safety hazard disclosures at point of sale, from what I see here from neighbors, it's not required. I'm told it's required, but it isn't happening according to people I've talked to. So, there's less of an incentive to actually coming from outside to do the home hardening. And of course, yes. I'm a homeowner. It's expensive and sad to remove the beautiful landscaping, wind gates, and clear the zero zone. So we have to use incentives along with education and general persuasion. So Wildcat FireWise is going to be initiating educational outreach teams on March 30th, a Sunday, to train residents to be resilience ambassadors and enhance skills in identifying hazards at their own homes, and then informally share home hardening knowledge and resources with neighbors. And I have two packets that I'll pass on just as examples, this Wildfire Prepared. And it's based on a concept that's been put out in Marin and in Moraga and a few other places, where they essentially have informal training and create kind of these ambassadors, which we're hoping to do. And Marin and Moraga have models, and this checklist and thing around kind of gives that. And so we're going to be using the checklist, and we won't have authority to tag anyone like a fire department member would have, but we will be able to give informal checklists, report cards to people and get them to understand their own situation a little bit more, because more has to be done because in the denial. So this hopefully will be used by the other FireWise communities too. And I had the first meeting that I set up with the three other FireWise communities. Just this week, and we're going to meet regularly and email in between. And we're going to, when new FireWise communities come on board, we're going to include them in our group. I'm going to be participating in the March 31st Red Flag Parking Pilot meeting. And one more thing that was an amazing thing that happened to me this week, which is that I've been working for 11 years in the area east of Kensington Road, working with the Diablo Fire State Council through the right of entry. And I've been doing this for 11 years. I learned in talking to Captain Kelly, I think his name is, who's the acting director of the regional park fire department, that we're the only place in the whole regional park where they've allowed the right of entry to add funds and to add additional work. I thought there was various places along the way, but we're the only place, and they're not letting anybody else do it. And the further good news is the East Bay Regional Park District has been working behind the school and all the way to the Kensington border down to Lake Street, and way earlier than they ever have before, and much further down. And if anybody wants to see, look behind the school, and you'll see huge burn piles up to 200 feet below the school. So basically, it's very exciting to see the extra attention we're getting. It doesn't solve all of our problems, and we're going to work on focusing on individual homeowners and training them to be resilience ambassadors.
That's wonderful.
That's my report.
Thank you.
Alan, where can we get this?
It's the email.
Oh,
it's in the email. Okay.
There's a couple of copies here. If anybody writes your email down, I'll email the various pages to you.
I have it in your email that
I
was forwarded.
My email for the three things. It's one is
the public
checklist,
comment.
And another is
the right here.
Oh, yeah.
The checklist.
Great.
There's a whole bunch of similar checklists, but the ones I'm choosing are the example. So
oh, that's good to know. Thank you.
Use it for your own home too.
Oh yeah, I know. I've been to the Fire Safe Marin website, and I thought theirs was really
it's
good.
Incredible.
It kind of just synthesized it and just kind of laid it out very simply and just like boom, what can you do really fast? I already have it, so
is
there
it right
you go.
To ask?
Sure.
Okay, so I walked on the
studio campus.
What are burn piles? I saw piles.
Well, the piles that are on the school, between the school and Lake Street, are Brad Johnson and Ciara Wood. They're the other people who do the, have gotten the land entry. Even Ciara is the one who originally talked to it. So it's actually Brad Johnson, and they collect funds and donations, and they get some funding, and then they either grind it up or haul it away in our endless reweights capacity that we have. But that's separate from what the regional park district fire department is doing, which is going further down up to 200 feet in some places from along the schoolhouse path and all the way over to Kensington Court.
So, my question is, so those piles are there and will eventually be taken out?
The ones that the regional park is doing, they're letting it dry first, and then they're either going to grind it or burn tag. The parts, you can see how they came out behind the school, and they all stand around hoses, but some of it may be ground and some of it and taken away in barrels and others may be ground.
Oh, okay, wait, save your questions for a little later, if you don't mind. I did want to tell you that we got an update from our director, Watt, about they are pretty much finished right now with what they have done, but they will be returning later on in the season to continue more things. So you have not seen the last, apparently, of what...
No, they're still there this week.
Oh, they're still there? Okay.
We're going to be coming back next week, too.
Excellent.
Every time I see the trucks, I go out and get the updates.
Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to add that Alan gave me a tour this morning.
Okay.
And it's really great to see this stuff. Alan, thank you so much for all your hard work making this happen. It shows that we can make progress, but we also have to be vigilant.
Yeah.
And work on our own houses too.
Yep.
Yes, I'm the same. Okay, so any more public comments? Well, online, we have 5 attendees. Oh, we need to... Oh, okay, Adrienne is online. So... we need to allow her to participate. So remind me how that goes again. Okay.
Make a motion that she can appear via Zoom.
Okay. And also I see David Spath, he's in attendees as well. You're in attendees. You're in attendee. Yeah. Okay, Adrienne. Okay. Okay, you're up. Adrienne, you're there. Let's make sure we have the same one. Adrienne Johnson.
Looks like she's muted.
I'm here.
Okay, good. And you are the one, right?
Sorry, I can't hear you too well, but I could tell I'm unmuted now.
Okay. Are you?
How many needs to be?
Can't be.
Okay.
No. So, oh, yeah.
Something's wrong.
Here, this one.
There. Nope.
No. Here. I think I'm
there. You go. Oh, we're still muted. Oh, then you need to, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Mute. Okay, we're good. Adrian, you are would like to participate via Zoom, correct?
Yes, sure.
Okay. A motion for Adrian to participate remotely via Zoom for this meeting.
A second.
All in favor?
All right.
All opposed? you oppose? Oh, you said yes. Okay. There are no opposition. You're good. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more public comments? I don't see. I think we are ready to move on. All right. Consent items. We need to approve the minutes. Does anyone have any corrections for the minutes? No? Then do I hear a motion to approve the minutes? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Carries with everyone here. Next, new business. Okay, Johnny's going to give us an update on a bunch of things so that he can kind of give us an idea of where we are with projects, initiatives, things going on around the community, and before we get to the work plan project goals, which we're going to do hopefully quick and together since I need to leave at 5:20. So we should end at 5:15.
All right. Are we skipping over 5A and going straight to 5B?
Oh yes, I forgot about that one. No, we are not. We are not skipping it. Thank you, Johnny. Rachel, you're up. Clarification on the Brown Act rules and attendance rules and teleconference rules.
Yes. So all the board members are expected to attend regular and official meetings. Although we do not have specifically for all the committees, but they are recommended to do the same and to adhere by the regular. Rules for regular board meetings. Remote participation, we can do remote participation due to just cause or emergency circumstances for no more than 3 consecutive months or 20% of the district's meetings. A traditional Brown Act teleconference would be requiring to locate your or have a location on the agenda of where you're at. There is no direct the Brown Act does not specifically say to any absenteeism in terms of termination or vacancy. It's in general, if a member is absent for more than 3 consecutive meetings or a set of percentage within the year, it can be grounds for a vacancy or removal of a committee from a committee or board position.
Okay, so it's you can attend remotely up to 3 times, and then also in general. Try not to be absent more than 3 times for the year.
Yes.
Okay.
As far as the location, if you are remote, how much notice do you have to give on what that location will be?
Before we post the agenda, because it has to be on the agenda.
So it means, does that mean like 3 days?
Yeah, the sooner the better.
Yeah.
So we have time
if
to.
One is traveling, it can be hard to know exactly where one's going to be.
So as long as it's 3 days before, it's posted, so.
So we post that. Usually we post it on Monday.
Yeah.
And so that means that people should email Mary or Rachel before then to let them, to give her them an address at which they are going to be participating from. Unless it's an emergency, right? And then you just, again, as soon as you know that you're not going to be here, you just email Rachel and Mary and they will get it set up and it'll be, ideally be agendized, but sometimes it can't be, right? Because it's emergency. So, but should be agendized just for the future.
A question. Is anybody actually tracking this? you know, as part of the meetings and stuff. Yeah. I mean, a lot of language in this says can, should, you know, it's not as definitive as the way you just expressed it, I guess. So I don't know if the language needs to be, you know, cleaned up at all. But I mean, at the intent, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it. I agree with it. It's just that, you know, it says, you know, there's no, it can be grounds for vagueness or removal. But there's no policy on
what
it would be or how it would be.
Right, that would be a board decision. So board or board
committee.
Well, it would be
any recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And it's two meetings. If you have 10 meetings, it's two meetings in a year. So the record doesn't say.
So it's two meetings, not three.
Per year.
The other thing is, you know, this is a standing committee of a district. So this is a legislative body. So it's not, it has weight.
Well, you're subject to the Brown Act under the circumstances, just like the board. But you have to follow the same rules as in the Brown Act. And that's why you went through these criteria. One thing, I'll let you.
Well, I was going to say, just so you know, that attendance, generally, it's by calendar year, not by fiscal year or anything. Mm-hmm. It's calendar year. So, what?
One question I have is the statement of financial interest. Because we're standing committee, everyone is supposed to fill that out before April 1st. And I was just wondering if everyone has done that.
Yeah, the Form 700. Which
Form 700 is the term. Right.
Yep. Right. It's pretty much.
Where is it online? It's not. I mean,
you're okay because you were just appointed.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of us should already be getting emails from the county that say, hey, you need to fill this out.
You didn't see it though? I did
not. You didn't?
Not aware of the site.
Oh.
Oh, no,
because
no, I
always filled one out as a public member.
But they used to get a public account.
That's not good. Okay. You're writing that down, Rachel. Okay. Yeah, because public members, because you're on the committee, should also have to fill them out.
Yeah.
And technically, no, I have not filled mine out for here, the board, the state.
Yeah,
but I will.
Days.
I do. It's April 1st, and then my job's like, they're gonna fine you $10 a day. But
given that we didn't receive them from the county, do we wait until the county contacts us, or do we need to proactively?
That's a good question. Normally, they send it to you, and then you create the form for yourself. But do you?
You can fill. You can. My recommendation is that you go to the Secretary of State Fair Political Practice website, download the form, and fill it out. Or you can fill it out online, and you can just send it to Mary for that matter.
There's a county website, and so I'll go on there and check it, and I can see if I can blast it out to everybody.
That would be
from that wallet from the Contra.
It's TOLT, right?
In fact, if you last year, you should have that file, will have it on record.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very easy to resubmit.
Last year, when you tried to send it in, it wasn't going through. It wasn't accepting it. And then Peter and I wound up folding up in person. Yeah. And there was some sort of glitch was. So hopefully you've gotten it straightened out.
Either can get the net file or you can go to the Fair Practice website and there's a PDF that you can fill out on.
But Mary should probably know because they might not be accepted if they don't have you as a person to be.
Yeah.
Receiving. So.
Oh, no, you don't send it there. You just fill it out, download it, and send it to Mary have it on record.
Yeah, or and also that you've at least gone through it and understand what you need to, put in it, which I didn't have to put really anything in it. In order to fill out the form, not only do you need that form, but you also need to do the, what are they called? The conflict of interest code, which is on our website, the Kensington Fire website. And you have to, based on what is considered conflict of interest, like say having property within Kensington, you just need to report that. Like if I own a house in Kensington, then you put that on and that's it. So that's generally what.
If you own a house in Kensington, you don't have to fill that out as a property. It's if you own rental property, as an example.
Oh, that's then it. You have to put it. Thank you.
What's that form? What's the other form called?
It's Form 700.
Yeah.
Form 700.
Okay. Let's definitely, can we have Mary or you like get instructions and, or, you know, both the link for the conflict of interest code and then the Form 700.
It's all one. It's one and the same. The Form 700 has all of those criteria filled out, and it's all the information on each page is part of the Form 700. The conflict of interest. Anyway.
Yeah. So, well, some of them apply. Some of them don't. So what tells you what you have to fill out is our conflict of interest, because the conflict of interest for different entities is different. Like my state conflict of interest is completely different than my conflict of interest for this committee and the board. Okay, so that's good. I'm glad good. Thank you for asking that and catching up. Although I will tell you, as an APC member 3 years ago, I probably submitted it like 2 weeks late and they didn't say anything.
They're not going to take
you
down. Yeah, so it's not like, yeah. Okay, anything else? Everyone clear on everything? I know I tend to need a refresh on that kind of stuff. Okay, Johnny, awesome. You have everything up. Oh, public on the Brown Act, absentee rules and stuff like that. That's it? No? Okay, you're on, Johnny.
Okay, so I have a couple topics, so I'm going to start with this one, the hazardous vegetation removal. With the current program, work has started. We have over a dozen projects completed already, and reimbursement requests and reimbursements are processing. So I want to note that this program is more than just vegetation removal. It's a really good learning experience. We're learning a lot about the conditions in the community and the opportunities where we can improve emergency preparedness overall. So the question here is, should this program be refined and expanded? We are still receiving inquiries about the future of this program and requests to submit applications. So, I mean, even because we just closed out the application phase, we still have interest. We have identified problematic vegetation in the community that can't be removed with other existing programs. So, this is an opportunity for us to kind of fill a gap in funding to improve wildfire mitigation for the community. And this program is increasing our outreach within Kensington to expand our other initiatives like FireWise and chipping and et cetera. So this program is acting as an investment toward more community-wide preparedness activity. For example, like when you have, you know, when you're selling a product and you have to advertise selling that product, your cost, your investment is going towards marketing. This is kind of working in that same avenue. We're kind of funding this vegetation removal, but it's making inroads into developing relationships in areas of Kensington where we've kind of had blind spots or inactivity over a number of years. So here are some overall observations. New homeowners are inheriting hazards. There are a number of people that are migrating here from other regions and states and even other countries. They are largely unaware of the risks and the plant types. Homeowners who list and sell the properties are knowingly passing the problem down to someone else who has no concept of what they're buying. We should explore how to address vegetation management while a transaction is happening and put the seller, well, maybe, I mean, this may be controversial, but maybe we put the seller on the hook for removing the vegetation as a contingency. There are a number of people under fixed incomes and strained from financial obligations. You know, despite people being retired or working full time and have good salary, there's still a high cost of living, and a lot of the newer residents are doing repairs to their homes. A lot of the homes are kind of as is, so they have priorities in fixing up their homes as well. So they're kind of stretched to a position of you know, kind of where they need to put their money. Is it over the roof or around their property? So there's been some observations of that. Other funding sources not available to Kensington residents. I'm constantly considering other funding resources for a lot of these projects, but some of them just are not accessible to the community. For example, Measure X will only be applicable in certain conditions, like if it's a dead tree removal, or if it's you know, a tree that's in an open public space. So most of the property, or most of Kensington, is private property. So that's what we're targeting. So Measure X isn't always applicable in that case. PG&E grants. PG&E is offering $100,000 grants for the removal of vegetation along their service infrastructure, which was really attractive to a lot of our residents. But we can't tap into that because PG&E is only providing those grants through fire safe councils. And I reached out to Diablo Fire Safe Council to coordinate being a fiscal sponsor. And they told me that they're not able to be a fiscal sponsor at this time. So it just leaves us in an opportunity, a loss of an opportunity there. So if we're able to tap into funding through Kensington Fire Protection District, that would kind of close that loop. Contractor standards and education opportunities. I believe that developing a bilingual document that can be distributed throughout the communities for the contractors to understand what kind of the expectations are for fire preparedness, you know, like removing Scotch broom, for example, you know, taking it out by the root and not just cutting it down at the ground level, making sure stuff doesn't grow back, would be important messaging. And they can also understand that juniper can be a target for us to remove and replace with other non-hazardous vegetation. And that's an opportunity for them for replanting and also removing, but it also moves toward a safer community as well. So those are just considerations for expanding and refining the program later. But what I really want us to think about are some of the things that we can take to the board now to address some of these contingent or pending applications that we have. So there are about a little bit more than a dozen applications that were submitted in the last filing period that came to us for trimming and you know, stuff that the fire marshal had recommended, and they didn't meet the qualifications of this grant as it was written. But I think we can, if we are able to kind of refine some of the language in the grant program and increase the threshold, so that way we can target the large trees, or you know, help groups like parcels that are kind of grouped together that are all connected to the share common boundary, but there's one particular property that has vegetation that's problematic for all the surrounding properties. That would allow us to kind of target and help those residents and serve the community overall. If we're able to enable the fire marshal to recommend projects, it would also give us an opportunity to have a kind of a stopgap or a condition of an application that can come to us through the fire marshal's eyes, and then develop a cost share and community chipping program that has kind of a cost savings, but it involves the Measure X community chipping day. It involves the community working together to coordinate. And then we can have, you know, one vendor that they coordinate with to bring cost savings to have everything done at one particular time in one area, say, for example, the Arlington, or, you know, along, you know, those pinch points identified in the parking study or the traffic study, that we can accomplish a lot more effectively. So those are the kind of the key points of what I wanted to bring to the committee of what we're learning and what we're observing during this application, during this grant program, which, you know, really just kicked off last week after the decision to fund the program, the projects. So there's more to come on this, but I want to get feedback and kind of the green light or, you know, the go ahead to write something up to bring to the KFPD board for consideration.
Johnny, do you intend to kind of work with your group with this as well, or are you asking for, you know, input from the entire committee?
We've been having conversations about some of these elements. I think one of the key points was increasing the per parcel threshold, which would help us target those larger trees, especially the eucalyptus groves and the areas of that are in between Kingston and Sunset Drive, for example, which is our major conduit down through the Sunset Cemetery for evacuation. So that was one of the key points that we discussed. Does anyone from that subcommittee want to chime in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll go first. Well, first of all, Johnny put a tremendous amount of work to pull this together, and he's been to the board and the calendar item to move forward. I mean, I think we found out that, you know, it's a very popular program, that, you know, I think the total number would be close to $100,000, Johnny?
$86,000.
And some of these big tree removals, we're talking big money. So, you know, I think a couple of things. I think there's a lot of ideas that are coming out of this. I think it'd be great to know what is that threshold of money that is meant to be dedicated to this into the future, so we can kind of design for that to some level. And then I don't know how the other subcommittee people feel, but maybe we should have a discussion and bring back a couple of ideas for this larger group to weigh in on that are more specific than an open-ended discussion, you know, now necessarily, but, you know, other people
trying to. I agree with you. I think that was the purpose of the subcommittee to begin with. When we went through the first round, and Johnny suggested some expansion, but I think the subcommittee should have a discussion on that, bring back whatever recommendations we might have.
Yeah, it's just the first step for, you know, consideration to the next, because I think it's sort of like there's the program that seems to be very popular, and then there's these bigger exception pieces that would be a big bang for the community in terms of hazard mitigation, but very possibly.
Yep. I throwed the idea of taking that to subcommittee and then bringing it back. Wait, hold on. We're not done with. Oh, and then I'll get you. Anybody else on the committee?
Oh, I was interested in this question Johnny raised about new homeowners and inheriting hazards. And maybe we can look to other California communities such as Berkeley. Are they, you know, is that something you have that happens at the local level where you put that into a disclosure? You know, maybe we can piggyback on another community's approach to this.
I do know that the California Realtors Association has a checklist that's, you know, that is meant to be complied with in terms of 0-5 and then some other hazards, and I have a copy of the one. But I was looking for it madly before I came to this meeting, but when I find it, somebody gave it to me, somebody in the house across the street. It was quite extensive, actually, but I don't know if it's a mandate or if it's just a disclosure. That's a question. This is from the California Real Estate Realtors Association, or California Realtors Association, and it is a specific form. It's like 4 pages of, you know, issues around this.
Did you have it digitally, or did you just have a physical one?
I had a physical one, but I can scan it. I can scan it, and I meant to do that.
I suspect that if this isn't a common disclosure, and, you know, as Johnny says, things are, hazards are being passed down. It's not going to be for long now that we have our local responsibility, the new local responsibility areas have been defined, and then the state's going to come through and say how enact new ways to enforce whatever rules come out. And there, the building code already has rules for what homes should have in terms of fire hardness, depending if you are in one of these areas or not already. But it sounds like everyone's starting to become really understanding and aware of everything. And so now there's going to be a lot more rules and disclosures and stuff.
Who establishes this disclosure requirements for sale?
This was something that the person selling the property was required to fill out. And I'm not sure if it's for the realtor or if it's for the, you know, yeah. I
interesting.
Delvin, but she, it was a requirement, and it had, like, you know, requirements for compliance.
That's good.
So, and I just don't know how well it's, whether it's being enforced or if it's just the first step.
In. Well, I was just wondering if it's a requirement. I assume that some governance body has established it as a requirement for sale.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Alan?
Yeah, I was told that it was required that it be disclosed at the point of sale. I'm certain that it isn't being done in Kensington, but I talked to people who recently bought homes and they weren't told anything about the Juniper. And I've also been told, and I want to research and figure this out, I think in Marin and maybe in Marin Baraga, you're required to make the house comply when it's sale.
No, that's good.
And you know, if we could go in that direction, that would be great. It doesn't, not all houses are being sold, but it shows the example to everyone else, and it shows ultimately if you will be moving or selling your house, why not do it now, get the funding, and make your house safer and while living.
I was actually looking at a house on Zillow in Castro Valley, and the house had the zero to zone zero, like completely taken care of. I was like, wow, that's awesome. So I think, yeah, it's coming on. Well, yeah, because then your incoming buyer goes, hey, I might actually be able to get insurance for this.
Exactly.
So that's good. Okay, so I have like a little under a half hour. So are we good, Johnny? What we decided was this is going to subcommittee, and then you're going to bring back more stuff, more concrete ideas on accommodating some of the new things that have come out of the vegetation grant removal program.
Yeah, is there a public comment?
Oh, is there online? Oh, there is now. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Martin. Can you talk? Rachel, do you? Okay, we're working on you, Martin. Oh, yeah, there you go. Allowed to talk.
Okay, I believe I'm unmuted. Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to add my support to some of those points that Johnny brought up, specifically the per parcel limit. I'm the owner of one property that fits many of these bullets that are on the slides. We are relatively new homeowners. We are a young family, fixed income, other obligations, and it's very challenging to fund the work that we're trying to do. In fact, I submitted a written comment one or two meetings ago that describes this project that we're trying to fund, where our neighbors, so this is not our property, they have these large juniper trees that are partially dead. They're very close to multiple structures, overhanging onto several parcels. And we're really trying our best to get them removed. We got to a point where they're willing to remove them, but they're not willing to pay or unable to pay any of the cost. So we're really thankful to have this program, but it doesn't quite get us to the point yet where we can really fund the work out of pocket, the difference. So we're really looking to see if there is a possibility to extend the grant limit such that we can fund this project, because it would really benefit the community, I believe.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, I remember that project. So And I know it's on your radar, right?
Is it? That's a project that has the Juniper that covered three or four properties, the homeowner.
Yeah. So that's Martin, that's on our radar. So we hear you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Point, okay. Johnny's point, the landowner didn't want to contribute any money towards removing. Now, whether that was because of the income or whatever, and there's no way. And begs the question, should the homeowner have some responsibility there? Okay. Something we should probably be talking about for some reason.
Yeah, it seems.
That may be an opportunity for us to engage the fire marshal and have a conversation. I know that he's aware of that property. I'll reach out to Chase. I'm going to be seeing Chase on Saturday, or Fire Marshal Chief Beckman on Saturday. So I'm going to close the loop with him.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you, Martin. And next. Anything else? We already did public comment, so we're on to the next one. Item C, update red flag parking pilot program for work plan room. That's you, Johnny, right?
Okay. I don't have any visuals for this. Did I unshare?
No.
Is it still sharing?
Yeah, it's still sharing.
Okay, I'll just take it down.
I see red.
You see red?
Well, your slide's red.
Mm-hmm. I unshare. Oh, stop share. Okay. Let me get my notes. Let's see, where are we?
Red flag pilot parking pilot program.
Okay, just one moment. Flag notes from that. Okay, so the subcommittee is working toward a public awareness campaign that is universal to all residents related to red flag days. We're scheduled to meet, I know Alan just said this, we're scheduled to meet with him and Capelons on Monday to talk about the El Cerrito Red Flag Parking Pilot Program and the development of a similar program to implement within Kensington. Capelons is working on a survey, and she just passed that on to Steve Sailors to refine a survey to gather data about support and kind of the existing conditions on a particular street, so that way we can understand more about, you know, what kind of changes would need to be implemented there. So the subcommittee recognizes that we need to work in parallel with any development of any possible changes to street parking enforcement or any other decisions made by the county, since they have the ultimate jurisdiction. But we'll be focused on developing a public outreach campaign to inform the community on a number of issues. So one of the most important things of any campaign with red flag is registration for red flag notifications. I don't know if everyone in this meeting knows that the fire district, well, me, anytime a red flag day is issued by the National Weather Service, I push out a communication to the community on social media, but most importantly through email. So residents can register or subscribe to an email list that receives red flag notifications. I also use that same distribution list for other emergency related or preparedness related things. I don't use it all the time. I don't want, you know, message fatigue taking place. So it's very selective how many times I use that. So residents would be encouraged to register for these red flag notifications, because if we can't enforce or expect people to take action on a particular day, or a condition, unless we know they know that they're that this day is coming, or that day is an effective period during a certain time. So it's really important for us to push red flag notification subscription. We're also going to be focusing on, you know, improving their understanding of critical benefit or critical planning, and the benefits of being prepared and staged for quick evacuation, which includes having the go bag ready and staged and having your car parked in the direction that you need to leave. So those are things that are universal to all residents in Kensington. But where things will get a little bit more tailored down is, if you look at Lake Drive and you look at Purdue, I mean, they they're back to back. And the conditions on parking on Lake Drive are very different than the conditions on Purview. So with this campaign, we're going to have to tailor it in some cases on a street to street basis. Just like we did with last year's evacuation drill, each zone had its a different message. It's going to be tailored to each street in this case. So it's going to take a little bit more work. But as we're developing these Firewise communities, we're also getting better at messaging on a local, on a much more local level. So I'm projecting the public awareness campaign to launch late summer or early fall, around the same time that these conditions happen. I'll be planning to update the wildfire preparedness workbook to distribute in at the same time through block parties and community events. So aside from actual development and changes in street and traffic flow, we still have a lot to plan for with just the public awareness campaigns. So there's more to come on that as we move through these meetings. Is there any comment on that? Well, I kind of just threw a lot at you from different directions.
I was wondering, along with your push to get people ready to, you know, ready, set, go, and having ready to evacuate, will you be promoting early evacuation?
Yes, that's kind of I know that's a standard that we've been pushing since I've been here, since 2021, since Berkeley encourages early evacuation in especially in the advance of the particularly dangerous scenarios, the PDS, which was identified or declared as a new, you know, category of dangerous situations. We do. I mean, even the last evacuation campaign that we pushed out had the, you know, the recommendation to leave early before a start. You sound a little muffled.
So the answer is yes, you will be promoting that.
Yeah, yes, we do consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, okay. I'm sorry, I'm trying to share a screen so that way because this topic is very similar to, I have a PowerPoint that we could write down the goals, so, but it's not working, so I may have to restart in order to do that. So Johnny, you should, discussion. Any others? No? Public comment? No? Any online? Nope. Okay. Thank you, Johnny. By the way, the people who are on that project, are Rodney, Paul, David, and Doug. So those are.
And, you said Paul, right?
Yeah.
You said Rodney, Paul, Rodney, and Paul. Yes, I thought it was Rodney, Paul.
No, I'll switch up. Rodney, David, Paul, David, Doug.
Rodney. Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Okay. So, yeah. Great. Next one, 5D, update on Kensington Firewise development and upcoming events, work plan number 5.
Okay, so this Saturday we have Beloit and Highland risk assessment walks. I sent an email to the committee and the board about that. Please check for my email and read my thoughts about why it's important for this committee and for the district to know intimately what's going on with the Firewise communities. So today, Shakespeare Cluster, which I was calling Avon Firewise, the Shakespeare Cluster Firewise application was submitted about a week and a half ago, but today it passed through the state review and is now pending NFPA approval. So we will soon, hopefully, have our fifth recognized Firewise community.
Yeah, awesome. Avon, anywhere else?
Avon was, yeah, it's essentially the end of Berkeley Park, the north side of, is that Beverly?
I think so.
Yeah.
Basically over to Lenox, just that pocket right there, Avon. So Maybeck Firewise had a home hardening presentation provided by Diablo Fire Safe Council last weekend. So thank you to Cheryl Drinkwater of Diablo Fire Safe Council and Chief Chase Beckman for presenting to the Mavic Firewise community. And thank you to the members of this committee that attended. It was great to have your participation there. Redtail Ridge will soon have the same presentation to their residents. And there was another, what else was going on? We have York and possibly Purdue and Willamette forming a Firewise community soon. So there's something, you know, there's talks happening there. So it looks like everything from Kenyon or Purdue along Kenyon down to the Arlington may be a Firewise community eventually this year, which is a big chunk.
Wow. Awesome.
So I'll be working on a map to depict all of this to display at an event soon, which is the next agenda item. Sorry, I'm looking at the agenda now. Let's see if I can actually I can talk about it in this one. Okay. The Wildfire Community Preparedness Day and the shredding event is going to happen at the same time, at the same place. Kind of two birds, one stone. So it'll be on Saturday, May 3rd from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. We'll have the booth there, and I'm having the Firewise communities participate as a community outreach. So I'll be hoping to have some volunteers to participate in the shredding event so I can also be freed up to help sell installation of more Firewise communities to any residents that are coming by the booth. So the purpose of this event for the Community Preparedness Day is to connect the Firewise leads and to invite residents to meet the Firewise communities. We're working on programming a walking guided tour of Wildcat Firewise for residents who may not have had the opportunity to see the area and learn more about what life is like living on the wildland urban interface. So the guided walk provided by Alan it'll touch on the projects and the community driven initiatives undertaken by those residents that are involved in Firewise. So people will get a better sense of what's happening up on the top of the ridge. And for a lot of the people that live on, you know, whatever you call it, Baja, Kensington, it'll give them a reason to go up there, and we'll have the opportunity to have cars park in the parking lot and then give them something structured to engage with. So we're working on that. And please let me know if you're able to come to the Saturday, May 3rd shredding event from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. I'll need help with parking and traffic flow and unloading boxes. And since I can't always have the firefighters there because they get called out, we usually have just like maybe two of us there plus the truck driver and then me. So it'd be nice to have a larger group there.
Saturday, March 29th. Is that what you're talking about?
Saturday, May 3rd.
May 3rd, I see.
Yep. I'll be there.
Yay.
You'll be away. I will say, as a professional tour guide, that Alan is an excellent guide in his own right, and it's worthwhile going on a tour with him.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, I'm excited. Thank you, Alan, for doing that.
We can see the project that's been going for years and really only run the whole district. And it's protecting the whole neighborhood, really.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they want to have a 200-foot open space between the homes and where the foliage of the park starts. And we're beginning to make progress after all these years.
Okay.
With the help of these favorite home
parks. But you also get to see a wood rat nest.
Okay.
You get to see other cool things. Right. So it's not just eating your vegetables. It's also
and the bird pile, how they're using the traditional Native American techniques to some extent.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Okay, so we're actually on F now because I just covered D and E.
Okay, so any more public comment? Any board comment? Committee comment? Nope. Okay, good. Proceed. You're good. Proceed. Can you hear me?
Oh, what do you mean proceed? I'm done.
Oh, you're done. Oh, yep. I thought you were had announcing it. Okay, so we're in F. Okay, yes. I may have to, we have 10 minutes, and I may have to actually, in order to share my screen, restart my Zoom.
Do you want to send it to me or something? I can share.
Oh, I want to type. So I think I'm going to do it really. Okay, let me see if I can share first.
Okay. Where's your Zoom thing?
Yeah.
Watch. Why doesn't that work?
So, it didn't. Yahoo. Okay.
You just need somebody watching.
It's true. Okay.
It's old chicken of the.
Yahoo. Okay, good. So, all right. So we kind of already talked. We're overlapping a little bit here. But so we have this work plan and we've assigned some members. Adrian, we need to assign you to a couple things too, if you don't mind. Do you have access to the work plan in the packet? And also for others, I did bring a work plan. Yeah. Okay. Are you there, Adrian? Okay, you're there. Okay, so number one, if you can look at the screen, you can see I have the work plan number one, red flag parking pilot program. The subcommittee is Paul, David, Doug, and Rodney. Okay, that's the least I did. Johnny did mention district pushes out red flag notifications. So that's something that's kind of already going, but will be incorporated. I didn't know if you guys had any goals and or any timelines you wanted to add to this list.
We're going
to
have another meeting.
You need a meeting first.
We're going to be talking to Kate Blons, is that right?
Yes, Kate Blons.
We're close, but we maybe need to have that meeting first.
Okay, so we can do this maybe as we do next month's EPC, we could have this up during the discussion so that way we can just add things to it. So that way it's everyone can see and kind of be on the same page. Okay, that's good. But we can also just continue through too. Johnny, did I get everything that you had said? I know you had told me a lot here and is there anything else specifically that I can add?
Alan's going to be presenting something with me too.
Yeah, Alan is meeting with Kay Blons and Alan.
Doesn't know that yet, but
the red flag.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard this been in the Altruita one.
Oh, that's great. Oh, wow. You get around. Yeah. I love it. Thank you. Okay. Hopefully I spelled your name right. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. So you're pretty much at this point. Next meeting to. Doesn't help that I'm foggy today. Next meeting to decide on the goals and timelines. Okay. All right. Anything else? No, I think we're good. All right. Hazardous. Johnny already went through this. Your goals. You are also going to have a meeting and considering, increasing. Let's see.
Many recommendations.
Thank you. Oh, crap. Okay, yeah. No, the direction making recommendations steps. And then, e.g., per parcel, increasing per parcel. Limits, big trees, etc. Okay. Next, house hardening support program. Doug, Annette, and us. We should set a meeting to. We're going to set a meeting. I don't know if you guys want to do Zoom or in person. We have the option to, I think, meet at the fire station. Yes, Johnny? Or no?
You can if we can, if I'm there, I can get us in. So we'll just coordinate it when I'm there.
Was probably easier.
So where do you live?
I live up by Dillon Park. By the reservoir.
Oh, okay, by the reservoir. I mean, we're very close to each other. We're just on the same block. But yeah.
I can travel.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Maybe we can even have now because I have two kids and it's just there's no time.
I'll send out an email and so that we can start. figure out a time.
Yeah, to set goals. Okay. All right. So I guess that's where we are with that. Yeah.
I'm not on that subcommittee, but when David brought this up, I totally agree that it may be the cheapest, easiest way to start targeting houses that don't have small or screens already, but we went over how much it costs, which was very little, possibility of establishing another vegetation removal program, but accepting for screens would cost a fraction.
Okay.
I was personally,
oh, yeah,
as almost an outsider, like to see that put into the car first.
A screen.
You can do that a lot faster than you can do a lot of this other stuff.
Screen.
There was an excellent documentary on BBS about the focus on what we can do to prevent Los Angeles from happening again.
Is that the six-part series about the LA fires?
The weathered.
Yeah,
the one, yeah, not the same part, the one that just aired on Thursday before last, nationally.
Yeah,
I
thought you said that out there. You know, I thought you did too, but maybe not.
I may not have, I think I'm using an old email.
Okay.
You can hear, you
know, I think I'm using an old email.
What?
But I'll send you it, just aired nationally. It's also this,
which they have something about screens and
basically the screens, the roof, and the 0 to 5.
Yeah,
if you can do those things, that's an excellent start. That's not everything, but it's an excellent start.
And the other two are big projects, relative.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're replacing the most roofs, are Class A now, I think, as I understand them, if they're up to date. But a 0 to 5 is a big project, but it really matters.
I really like the idea of coming up with a specific zone 0 type of initiative for us to do. So,
and I mean,
whether it's removal or do you want to join us?
That I can.
Okay, I'll put you in.
I've ordered some samples of wildfire defense mesh, which is a type of, you know, 1/16 inch screen, and I'm going to try to do it for my dad.
Okay.
As examples, you can contact them and they'll send you samples. And I'm not advertising for this company.
No, that's fine.
And it looked really good and it had good ratings. So it's called Wildfire Defense Mesh.
Wildfire Defense Mesh.
They work with
And so it goes on the deck itself?
No.
Under so that don't go in that
way. And then you prevent anything from getting under that would burn and then burn out through the deck.
Yep. Okay.
So I think it's worthwhile and it's free to get the samples. They send you about 5 or 6 samples.
Okay. Okay.
And also, you can use it for soft defense in other places where you have little openings and you can get up.
Okay.
The only thing is to be certain that in some of those locations that you still have enough ventilation.
Yeah.
Right. You may have to use 8-inch if not. And how you determine that?
Okay. April 2nd. Okay. Thank you.
You may want to talk to Kay Wilds. Cheryl Drinkwater made an excellent presentation.
Oh, yeah, she.
Last Saturday, she talked about screening and the different types of screening and how you determine how much ventilation you need if you're going to put these screens on. So,
okay, thank you. She did send out an email post that. Sad I missed it.
There's a post event email on that.
Yeah, that's because it.
Yeah.
Okay, but if we contacted her, there's some sort of.
Yeah, or I can forward you it to.
That'd be great.
Remind me. Okay, forward it out to. Okay, 60 seconds.
Why did you take over?
It's my computer. I mean, I could go get her and then come back.
Okay.
I could go get her and then come back, but
then we're gonna. And you can get different hosts for the meeting.
The PowerPoint's on mine.
You could email me.
I could. Where are?
Or we could just finish up.
We could finish since I'm not adding too much. I mean, this is more of an update.
Be high level.
Yeah. Very, thank you. It's so funny. Chris always says that. okay. Hazardous vegetation along fire evacuation routes. This is work plan number 4. This is myself, Rodney, and Lisa, and we've already scheduled our first meeting, and I have a lot of stuff for that meeting and stuff. So, yeah, there's no reason for me to put it all up there because we need to like talk about it. Okay, Firewise development, pretty much Johnny already went through all of this stuff. There's the Beloit and Highland Boulevard Firewise walks. Please participate if possible. Everyone. There we go. Yeah. Nice. Let's see. Long Range Acoustic Devices. This is Katie, me, and Johnny. We should actually probably talk about meeting. And then also I had outlined there were 3 ways. There were kind of 3 paths, although I'm totally forgetting one of them. But one of them, we're waiting for Mary. Did you? Yeah. Update.
No. I sent that, I sent it to you and to Mary. Things that needed to be filled out.
Uh-huh.
I could have supplied that information, but I thought it would be more appropriate for Mary to submit it.
Yeah.
And then I got it back again, and it was she hadn't submitted it, so I sent it out to her again. And at that time, she was so busy with a number of other things, so she said she was going to get it out. I believe she has that one.
I think so too, but I haven't heard anything. But,
yeah. So. Has she gotten any feedback? And then I can also send out a little email to them.
Yeah.
And say, what do you need next?
Yeah. So that's good because, yeah, okay. So we need to get confirmation from Mary and then you're going to reach out. Okay, that's good. That's good. Then the second way was, I think we should contact Joya. And to ask about the county, what the county plans are to start putting LRADs around the county, because that was one of the things that they were going to be doing. Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe it's time to reach out and see if that's going anywhere as a first step, because as another path to acquiring them as fast as possible.
That's right.
And what's the other end? The first avenue is going through kind of the fire safe grant, like the Genesis way, like see if we can apply for grants to help fund them.
Police
grants. Oh yeah, police grants. That's right. It's police grants.
Wouldn't the best way to do that go back to what we tried before and get it done?
Well,
the representative, right? She's talking
CWS about the CWS representative, the CWS.
Yeah, CWS. Yeah, right here. Yes.
Cavallaro.
Yeah.
Julie Cavallaro.
Yeah, Julie Cavallaro.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't know.
Shirt in the horse's mouth. And if somebody comes here like that and faces a committee like this, they'll be prepared and they won't be taking slop. I just like that idea a whole lot.
I mean,
successful the first time in National War.
I think Joy would be interesting in that information.
Yeah, because
experience has been putting them in.
We did have a third one, and I can't remember. Yeah, it's been totally blanking. Okay. Yep. Okay.
But as far as the success, they know they did the test.
Okay. I think we're good. Johnny, since you already gave us, okay, so I've got to go. Johnny, since you've given us more or less your report, do you have a report to give?
No, it was all incorporated within the other items.
Okay, so we're good. Yeah, so I think we are mm-hmm. good. Thank you, Johnny.
You're welcome.
Okay, any last comments, committee comments? So next time, we're going to come back with And I'll have this set up again, and we'll go and we'll set out, we'll write out the goals for each committee. And in the meantime, the committees will be meeting, subcommittees will be meeting and deciding on their goals and their timelines, and then we come back.
So each committee can put their own stuff in here?
Yeah, totally. Happy to. Okay. Yeah, totally. Okay. All right. I think we're good. I think. All right. Oh, thank you. All right. Thank you. All right. And we're adjourned. I think that's it, right?
Okay.
All right. Stop share. Okay.